Time to welcome into the program Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Hello there, Mr. Finn.
Hello, Rich. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How's your Monday going?
Caught in a thunderstorm while for a walk this afternoon.
Oh, dear.
Otherwise, pretty good.
See, you're not. You're much younger than me. I have to maybe take a little bit of a nap so I can make it to the end of a Monday night game that I want to see.
That's coming between this interview and the one with the JV guys later.
All right. Okay. I don't feel so bad now. I have to ask. I'm reading the unconventional preview earlier today, and I was blown away when you said whoever starts at quarterback tonight, the Patriots should have an easy time with the Bears. I watched Bill Belichick last week. This is the greatest Bears team since 1985.
Yeah, my friend Bill Barnwell writes for ESPN. Had a good line on Twitter after Belichick was talking about how good the Bears were early last week. He said that the more he praises the team, the less respect he has for them, which is, I mean, we've seen it for 23 years now. So he can talk up a lousy team as well as anybody, but usually what he really thinks about them becomes pretty clear on game day. I think we saw that a little bit with the Lions a couple weeks ago, where clearly a coaching mismatch, maybe not a pure talent mismatch, but you knew that the Patriots are going to have a significant coaching advantage in that game. But I think Bill came pretty close to comparing Dan Campbell to Bill Parcells. So he gets pretty over the top in one aspect, and that's when he's praising an opponent. That's about it.
So Mac Jones, we assume, will be the starter tonight. And if that's the case, to me, that's the easy decision, the old you don't lose a job because of injury. But is it the right decision for this team?
Ask me after the game. I think it is, yeah. I mean, it's amazing what short memories people have with him. He had one of the better rookie seasons the quarterback's ever had. I think it was the fifth most passing yards. 22 touchdown passes, 7-game winning streak. Now, they're 9-4 at one point last year. Got them to a playoff game, and as badly as they got blown out, he really didn't play badly. It's just, things that hadn't gone well the end of last season, but people still thought really highly of him coming into this year, and he got himself in better shape. And I'm a little surprised Patriots fans, a good segment of Patriots fans, I shouldn't lump them all together, but have been kind of willing to forget that, because Bailey Zappe went out and did a great job for two-plus games against at least in a couple of cases, and you could probably put the Packers in there too. Not very good football teams. So I think it was really the best-case scenario for the Patriots. The Belichick got a little bit of he wants to give Mac a kick in the butt. Well, his rookie backup's playing pretty well, and they went 2-1 in that stretch when Hoyer started the Packers game. Zappe came in and lost that one, but overall, you get him. I think the coach probably feels pretty good about his situation. I think he still feels pretty good about his incumbent quarterback, too.
I thought you made a great point in the piece, which is that the coaches didn't exactly put Mac Jones in the best position possible early in the season.
I think everybody can pretty much agree that what they did with Zappe should have been what they were doing with Jones to some degree,
right,
where you don't really simplify things as much as they have done for Zappe, where it's so much of getting receivers open is scheme rather than waiting for the quarterback to make a play. But they had Jones out there throwing deep like he was, I don't know, Daryl LaMonica. You want to go back that far? I mentioned Blake in the column, the old Ravens Bengals quarterback who could throw a pretty downfield ball and not really do much else. But it really didn't play to his strengths. They never ran play action, which has really worked well with Zappe. They didn't really give Mac any chances with that. Really, their best running back wasn't getting the brunt of the carries. I mean, Damian Harris is a good back, but Ramondre Stevenson looks like a Pro Bowler and the kind of guy you should be banking on for 20-plus carries a game. Wears down a defense, all those things you want to see. And he wasn't utilized that much. And some of it's on Mac. I mean, he made a couple of terrible throws where he didn't see linebackers underneath or defensive backs underneath and bad interceptions. And he kind of locks in on Jacoby Myers a little bit, but he's got Tyquan Thornton now. They found ways to get Smith and Henry open a little bit. Myers is back in there. Parker has been really good with Zappe, either making catches downfield or getting flags. So hopefully that works out too. But Mac's a more talented quarterback. He has more knowledge in the system, and he's probably going to be very highly motivated to play well.
When will Marcus Cannon be ready, Chad?
Well, he's your fullback and the coverage for Isaiah Wynn. But yeah, it's pretty embarrassing for Wynn that you got to pick up a guy who obviously was a solid player here, and he's got some Super Bowl rings to prove it, but he's barely been in the league the last couple of years and has dealt with injury issues, and he comes in and he's playing better than a guy making $10 million a year who you moved off left tackle because he wasn't that effective over there. And four out of the five linemen are playing pretty well, and Cannon's doing a nice job when he comes in, but Wynn's just been a disaster, and he might be, of all their linemen, he might be the most physically talented one that they have, but just hasn't worked for him this year. Hopefully he can get this straightened out because the penalties have gotten ridiculous with him.
We're talking with Chad Finn here on Downtown. Defense, I'm sure, eager to get out there and do what they can with the poor Justin Fields, who's been sacked, 23 times this year? I have to think Matthew Judon is salivating right now.
Yeah, it's a crazy percentage. I think I had it in my column where he's thrown 115 passes and been sacked 23 times. So, you add those numbers together, it's 138. It's a 16.7 sack rate, and it's 6% higher than any other quarterback in the league. I think Daniel Jones for Giants is second, right around 10. So he's mistake prone, and he doesn't get protected very well. And it feels like this is going to be a situation where they really capitalize on having an inexperienced, raw, poorly coached quarterback on the opposing sideline in the opposing huddle. Feels like it might be a big Matthew Judon night. Dietrich Wise has had a terrific season so far. You could see those guys having pretty big games, and probably some safety blitzes in there too. We could see Duggar and Adrian Phillips make a couple of plays here.
Well, if they're able to get that victory tonight, all of a sudden they're not already right in the thick of things in the AFC East, and a great opportunity over the course of the next 3 weeks with two games against the Jets.
Yeah, Jets, who unfortunately for them lost Brees Hall to ACL injury. Just a dynamic back. Watching him, Curtis Martin's probably my favorite Patriots player of all time, and his vision really reminded me of him, and he had incredible breakaway speed after that. So tough blow. I don't think the Jets get a lot of sympathies around here, but it stinks as a fan when you have a player come in and he catches everybody's fancy, and he's clearly going to be a really good player, and just all of a sudden they're gone for however long it's going to end up being, close to a full season. So tough break for them, but they do look like a legitimately good team now. Robert Saleh seems to be a solid coach. They've got quarterback issues. Zach Wilson's still very mistake-prone, but all these high draft picks they've had the last 3 years really given them a core of good young players on the roster, and seems like it's pretty real that they're trending upward.
Did Tom Brady stay too long, or should he have worked harder to get himself to Miami?
When should he have retired? I've been thinking about that today, because clearly he stayed too long. I mean, I never thought I'd feel sympathy for Tom Brady, who seemed to have the perfect life. But he's just he's a middle-aged guy now. He seems like he's going to head into a divorce. His team's terrible around him, and all these things that have been so important in his life for so long are kind of falling apart. And you can tell he's wearing it. He looks gaunt and angry and tired. And Brady was always pretty easy to read anyway. You could tell him ticked off about something, even if he didn't say it. And clearly he's feeling the effects of a lot of different things right now. But I don't know, I was thinking about when he should retire. I mean, he should have been the MVP last year.
Right.
He could have called it quits after they won their first Super Bowl. But, you had to figure Father Time was going to catch up with him at some point. It's been so abrupt this year, and so many other things going on around that. It really feels like kind of a shock to see things going this way for him.
And yet I'm not sure he still isn't one of the top 10 or 12 quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, he's not playing terribly. I watched a good chunk of that game yesterday. You know, Evans had the bad drop that might have changed things a little bit. But he is feeling ghost. I would say the one thing about Brady that maybe it tended to happen once in a while, the Patriots. But he when he feels the rush, he's just moving on to the next play. You know, chucking it out of bounds, or he's getting down. And clearly doesn't have any faith in his line and isn't interested in taking too many big hits at this point in his career, or even ones like the Grady Jarrett one a couple weeks ago that was the worst flag we've ever seen. But it just makes me think about how tough he has been at times when you need him to be. I mean, I remember that 2015 AFC Championship game with Denver where he just Von Miller and Derek Wolfe just beat the daylights out of him, and he hung in there and threw strike after strike, and I thought it was the toughest performance he ever had at one of them. And now he just doesn't seem all that interested in doing that in a regular season game for a team that probably isn't going anywhere.
Celtics off to a terrific start to their season. And boy, the way that Brown and Tatum are playing, it sort of feels like, not to overanalyze, but it sure feels like a couple of guys who said, you know, Ime did a great job last year, but we're the ones that got this team to the finals.
Yeah, they both came back clearly having put a lot of work in. You know, Tatum looks bigger. He just looks like he spent the off season throwing weights around and stewing about losing the finals. And Brown's game's even more polished. So I was a little frustrated with the Orlando game with him, because one thing that he needs to do to kind of take even another step is, when it's not happening for him, don't force it. Involve everybody else. The ball will come back to you. This team actually moves the ball now. And the other night, it was just crossover, crossover, shot, miss, and really forced his offense. And it's kind of a bummer to see that, because he'd been so good those first couple of games. But I'm sure he'll get back on track. And you know, it's a really deep team. Derek White played so well. Malcolm Brogdon is exactly what they needed. And as long as they stay reasonably healthy and get Rob Williams back at the end, it could be a pretty good summer for the Celtics.
Nice new contract for Charles Barkley and his cohorts. And to me, it's worth it. They're still on top of their game.
Yeah, it's still the only studio show that I make a point to watch, even if I want to go to bed or, it's the one at post game where I want to hear what they have to say, and that goes across any sport. There are other analysts, though, Alec Aaron, Pedro Martinez on baseball, and certain guys on football. You know, I really like Lewis Riddick on ESPN, whatever role he's in. But Barkley is still, and that whole show, the chemistry they have, remains must-see TV. And those contracts, I mean, that's their leverage, or their show. Turner's show to the NFL, NBA, that when our contract is up, we plan on still being a broadcast partner for the NBA. The deal is up, I think, after this year, pretty soon. And obviously, there's going to be a lot of networks that want the NBA and streaming services that do. So Turner was really trying to make a commitment to the NBA that they show to them that they intend to stay one of their broadcast partners for a long time.
You wrote about the baseball coverage, and I'm an unapologetic Bob Costas fan. What did you think of his work?
I think it hasn't been in the broadcast booth a lot in recent years. You know, he does MLB Network games and stuff like that. But this opportunity with the Guardians-Yankees series, I felt like he had 20 years of stuff that he wanted to get off his chest, and he crammed it into every little anecdote that he could. He probably should have cut his word count by about 10%. I mean, I remember there was one situation. I think it was Oscar Gonzalez won the game, and he's soliloquizing about something, and they're showing Gonzalez's previous walk-off hits in the playoffs, and Costas is almost talking about something completely different. It wasn't a Stan Musial story or his Mickey Mantle baseball card that he carries with him or any of the ones we've heard before, but it felt a little bit too much like the focus was on him getting his voice back out there. And it came at the expense of Don Orsillo, who has had TBS playoff games for three of the last 4 years, but they put Costas in his spot for the first round this year.
And I would love to hear Orsillo doing those games, but I don't know. And I hear what you say. I agree, but I enjoyed hearing Bob Costas back on games.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, when I was growing up, it's funny, you know, NBC had the Vince Scully, Joe Garagiola was the number one team, and Costas and Kubek was the second team, and on Game of the Week on Saturday, which is about the only time you could watch like an NL game at that point in time. And I like the second team better. I like Costas and Kubek better because Costas felt like he was speaking to me, a younger viewer, the way he looked at the game. But I think this time around he just had a little bit too much to say at the times where maybe silence would have been better.
Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Chad, good talking with you. As always, enjoy that nap, but wake up in time to talk to Javier. Don't sleep on Javier Garrity.
Oh, I'm sure he's got some Jets talk for me today. I don't know. I mean, the thing with him is whenever something goes wrong with the Patriots, it's over, and he just wants to talk about how it's over and Belichick's going to leave, so... The winning streak they're on is probably broken him a little bit.
I'm sure. Well, you have fun with that, and we'll catch you again soon.
Take care, Rich.
Thanks, Chad. Chad Finn of the Globe.